We're going to hear now about one of the most polluted regions in the world. And the pollution in a remote region in the far south of Russia is radioactive. That's where Joseph Stalin ordered scientists to develop the Soviet Union's first atomic weapon. In their rush, they dumped huge quantities of radioactive waste into the water system. A waste tank exploded in 1957, becoming one of the worst nuclear accidents ever. That was kept a secret for 3 decades, even though the radioactive fallout was massive and deadly. Then in the early 1990s, Russian and international scientists began to explore the legacy of the nuclear program. But as NPR's Anne Garrels reports, doors that were opening are again slamming shut.
In this serene setting of lakes and birch forests, the Soviet Union built the first of many closed cities. The available water was perfect to supply and cool the reactors necessary to build an atomic bomb. This isolated community of 85,000 was once only known by its postal code. It now has a name, Ozersk, and you can find it on a map. You can even find satellite photos on Google. But this weapons complex is still closed to all outsiders without special permission. Don't plan on an impromptu dinner. For Russians, even friends and relatives of residents, permission can take 25 days. For a foreigner, it takes at least 45, if ever. The closest I could get was a town an hour away, so 41-year-old Nadezhda Kutyapova, a human rights lawyer, had to meet me outside the triple fence and guard posts. Her father, one of the weapon scientists, died of cancer when she was 12. Last year, using her legal skills, she managed to get hold of his official health records, which had been kept secret. They confirmed he died because of the effects of radiation exposure.
He was one of those called in to clean up after the accident of 57. When I was growing up, no one dared talk about any of this. My father told me he worked in a candy factory.
Her family never received any compensation. Despite laws since put into place, Kutyapova says thousands more have been denied promised compensation.
I felt guilty. My family helped build the weapons, the effects of which sickened and killed them and others. I had to do something.
She created Planet of Hope to help the victims, most of whom were poor villagers downstream from Ozersk. For her efforts, she says she's been harassed and intimidated by the resurgent security services. They've turned up at one of her children's daycare centers to ask what kind of mother she is. They've illegally entered her apartment. Last month, she says, there was another illegal search, this time of her offices. She had just filed suit against the Russian government in the European Court of Human Rights on behalf of those who were in utero when their mothers were ordered to clean up the 57 accident. In the 1990s, it seemed the veil of secrecy was lifting. Because of the collapse of the Russian economy, nuclear scientists here were desperate for joint projects with American scientists. The U.S. helped fund these, so the poor Russians would not be tempted to sell their talents to countries like Iran and North Korea. And there's no evidence any subsequently went AWOL. The U.S. also wanted to make sure that plutonium in Ozersk was secured and invested billions of dollars into a storage facility. American and Russian environmentalists also worked together. Tom Cochran with the Natural Resources Defense Council was one of the first to explore the continued legacy of the 57 accident.
They didn't evacuate the people for like a week, and so they irradiated a bunch of people that they didn't have to.
He and Russian scientists also documented ongoing problems, including the large amounts of highly toxic radioactive waste still in holding ponds and Lake Karachay. It alone contains several times the radioactivity released from Chernobyl, and it's leaking into the water table. Muslumova, a village of more than 2,000 on the banks of the contaminated Techa River, was not evacuated until this fall, more than 50 years after authorities knew residents were at risk. 61-year-old Fagila Mardilova says the people here are simple peasants. They didn't know what to do or what to think.
Police told us not to swim in the river when we were children, but we swam in it. We all did. We took baths in it. We fished in it. Our livestock drank the water. It all looked so normal. We didn't know about radiation.
Natalia Mironova, who heads the Movement for Nuclear Safety, was one of the first here to demand information about what had long been hidden.
And there are continuing problems that need to be talked about in public. Continued emissions, violations of workers' rights, and until now, no law that the weapons facility has to pay for pollution. My job is to be an independent watchdog.
But in the past few years, she too has been constantly intimidated. She says she's been repeatedly threatened with legal action over funding from foreign donors. Sarah Mendelson with CSIS, a Washington, D.C. think tank, says Russian security services are using their increasing powers to silence non-governmental groups which ask uncomfortable questions.
Every time a Kremlin official makes a statement that sort of casts foreign assistance as somehow treasonous, every time that happens, I think it emboldens law enforcement out in the provinces.
And Natalia Mironova says tougher laws are in the works.
The government wants us to be tried if we write what they deem are alarmist reports about environmental threats. We could face 10 years in jail.
Reliable information is harder and harder to obtain. Rose Gottmuller, until recently head of the Moscow Carnegie Center, describes it this way.
It's treated as, in Soviet style, a security issue. Why are you making clear to the outside world that we have this environmental disaster on our hands? This is disloyal behavior.
Gottmuller says it's become harder for international nuclear scientists to collaborate with their Russian counterparts here. The U.S. only opened up its weapon labs to public scrutiny in the 1980s, thanks to a decision by a Tennessee country judge. This is inspiration for lawyer Nadezhda Kutyepova. She's suing the Russian government for violating civil liberties provided under the Constitution. She tried to do a study looking into the effects of the continued culture of fear and secrecy. She and her collaborator were investigated for possible espionage. Charges were never filed, but the message was clear. And the study has not been done. Anne Garrels, NPR News, Chelyabinsk.